This is Wisconsin Public Radio. And at the moment, this is Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross. This is all about Western Wisconsin arts and culture and humanities, the people who make it happen, and the places where it all happens. Today, music people know who Phil Cook is. He's a native son. He's coming back to where it all started to immerse himself with old friends and new musical experiences during this year's second Eau Claire's Festival, Friday and Saturday. Phil shares a story, and we'll share some music from Southland Mission, his loud and proud solo, But I Always Share the Spotlight album. Did you know there are a bunch of romance writers in our midst? And did you know they have a vibrant national and state association? And did you know they're having a conference in Eau Claire in October? You didn't know any of that. You will after today, along with all the specifics. Jim Oliver's here with news of Pinocchio playing in River Falls. River Falls Community Theater welcomes Prairie Fire Children's Theater in their Young People's production. So all that is just down the road, and here's where that road begins. Her name is Marissa Roth. She doesn't live around here, but after a week or so as a guest on Lake Wissota, she wouldn't mind the lifestyle. She's visiting from Los Angeles and is a published photojournalist and documentarian, including projects with the New York Times, the Pulitzer Prize-winning L.A. Times coverage of the L.A. riots of 92, and various adventures of her own. Right now, and right here, she's curator of an exhibit called My War, Wartime Photographs by Vietnam Veterans on display at the High Ground near Neillsville, Wisconsin. Our recorded conversation continues the story. You've been to Western Wisconsin before. You've been to the specific place at which your exhibit now sits, and that's the High Ground near Neillsville, where you can see for miles and miles and miles. You came a couple of years ago. You had your own show at that time.
Yes, I did. So in addition to, I guess, wearing a photojournalist hat, I also now I consider myself wearing a documentary photographer's hat. Concurrent to a number of my photojournalism years, I somehow took on, or I don't know if it may have taken me on, I pursued a project around the world about women who survived war. The project actually spans 31 years of photography, 12 different countries, as many either wars or conflicts or aspects of war. So everything from the Holocaust to German women who survived the Siege of Berlin to Japanese women who survived the A-bomb, women in Vietnam, Cambodia, Northern Ireland, and then also here in America, I was obviously very aware of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Wanted to figure out how do I tell a huge story, basically needing a small story to do that. In the summer of 2005, I had been following a story in the New York Times about a Marine Reserve unit in Columbus, Ohio called Lima Company. And in that summer, they lost 24 young men in two roadside bombs. And so that was sort of the story I chose to tell to exemplify the greater story. So anyway, so this project became a traveling exhibition. And then June Berg, who is the director of the Learning Center here at the High Ground, basically wanted the exhibition. The High Ground became one of the venues that my own project, it's called One Person Crying, Women and War. Mm-hmm. The High Ground hosted that exhibition 2 years ago. It was up for 3 months. And while I was there for the opening, as it is when I go somewhere, somebody becomes my everything person, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Uh-huh. And so I had a lot of time to chit-chat with June about everything. And on our last dinner, she said to me, a number of the veterans have asked me to scan their personal photographs that they took in Vietnam. And I looked at her and I was dumbstruck. I had never considered the Vietnam War from that perspective. And everybody, of course, has famous images of the young girl running, burned by napalm, and then Eddie Adams, the killing of the policeman or police captain. Mm-hmm. But I'd never considered the war through the eyes of the young men serving. I said, how are the photographs? And she said, quite understatedly, she said, oh, they're pretty good. And so I said, gosh, that would make an incredible exhibition. And then I came back home, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. Somehow the whole concept for the exhibition just came to me. I was actually swimming, and while I was swimming, the title came, and the first three paragraphs of a potential curatorial statement came to me. And so I flew out of the pool, sat down at the computer, wrote it out, and then went back swimming, and then came in, you know, dried off properly, and sort of reread it all and sent it to her. And I said, so if there could be a possible exhibition, this is sort of my concept and title, and I would love to curate this. What do you think? So she planted the seed, and then I saw the potential. So that's where it all began. And then she sent me, I think, about half a dozen CDs containing images. Slowly, she sent me more work, and then I knew some veterans, and then they kind of relayed the message, and then I typed up a more formal email with sort of what the project was about, requesting images, and gave a mailing address to veterans. And then I started getting things in the mail, photos, CDs. It really just quietly started coming together. And I became friends with Steve Maddox, the veteran who I'm staying with. And he became a bit of a sounding board. I needed to make sure that what I was saying and thinking and approaching was authentic and respectful.
That's the voice of Marissa Roth. She is the curator of My War, Wartime Photographs by Vietnam Veterans, on display at the High Ground near Neillsville, Wisconsin, and that is through October 30th. I read the viewer should have both an emotional and an intellectual experience. I think I understand the emotional side, but the intellectual, is that a dissection process? Is it an understanding process, an empathetic reaction? What is the intellectual side exactly?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say yes to all of those, but I would also add contextual. In many ways, these are more than snapshots. Some of the photographs, probably when the particular veteran was photographing it, and from what I understand, they were probably trying to make sense in their own mind as to what they were doing there. So it wasn't just about making a record to send home to the folks so that it doesn't look so grim, but I think it's also to just put a different perspective, even for oneself.
Yeah, I think a lot of the photographs are photos that one would find in someone's photo album. I mean, I don't think anyone, at least from my interpretation, tried to be overly artistic in taking a photograph. They were just capturing what was going on. They were engaging. That's the word that was used.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, I think some of the veterans had a higher degree of skill. You know, they may have taken a high school photo class. It's not like today where everybody has a camera or some sort of recording device. Then you really had to have an affinity for photography. It was a commitment. I mean, it was expensive to buy a camera. It was expensive to buy film. You had to go to the PX and, you know, send your film off to be processed.
Yeah.
So they really had to have a deeper feeling for it or a deeper need to want to do all those steps. But some of the pictures are quite profound, I think, almost in their simplicity. They're very evocative.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got. The line that I liked was, most photographers viewed the war from the outside looking in. This is the inside looking out.
Photojournalists viewed it from the outside.
So the exhibit is up through October 30th. It will travel, I believe, after that. Is it also a book, or is it going to be a book?
Well, we have the catalog. It came out beautiful. So that is available through the High Ground, and the catalog contains all of the images in sequence plus all of the text. For the moment, I don't know if there's going to be a book. I'm not pursuing it. Basically, a book probably would need a lot more photographs from a lot more veterans. To be perfectly candid, I still have to do the book on my own war project, my own Women in War project, which I'm kind of letting rest a little bit so I can go forward with a little more perspective. I'm not sure that I'm ready to undertake a My War book, but if somebody wants to come to me, I'd certainly entertain it.
Marissa Roth, thanks so much for being with us on Spectrum West. We will encourage people to visit the High Ground near Neillsville. Beautiful place to view the exhibit and to do so before October 30th. Enjoy your visit in Wisconsin as it continues, and all the best in your future endeavors.
Thank you, Al. I appreciate it.
Congratulations to the aforementioned June Berg on her Saturday wedding, a celebration for which Marissa has hung around, not very reluctantly, I might add. And congratulations to all who worked on and contributed to the exhibit. This is Spectrum West. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Simply Done in Downsville, offering fair trade gifts and a space for meetings, retreats, or classes in their historic schoolhouse overlooking the Red Cedar Valley. Simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from Marquardt Toyota, offering the all-wheel drive RAV4, a crossover committed to reliability. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at marquardttoyota.com. Here's a Spectrum memo. Next up at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee, Friday through Sunday, it's a broadcast, Broadway, there it is. One-track mind here. Broadway Cavalcade, Friday through Saturday evening, 7:30, and Sunday at 2 p.m. MabelTainter.org is the website just for you. Community Art Space presents music in Veterans Park, downtown River Falls, Friday and Saturday evenings through August, 7 to 9 p.m. Friday, it's Steve Kenny and Group 47. And Saturday, the Everett Smithson Band. Can't wait. Have fun in River Falls, everybody. Well, Jim Oliver placed a call Monday to River Falls because he had heard about a prairie fire over there. He will settle your anxiety within his weekly Oliver Report, which commences now.
River Falls Community Theater, in cooperation with the Prairie Fire Children's Theater of Barrett, Minnesota, will present Pinocchio Friday and Saturday at the River Falls High School. We're on the telephone with Sandy Blakely, a member of the River Falls Community Theater Board of Directors. She has served as the liaison for the local theater company with the Prairie Fire Children's Theater Company for several years. Well, Pinocchio is the second children's production in River Falls this summer. The first was Snow White. So how long has the River Falls Theater Company been working with the Prairie Fire organization?
We have been working with them since 2008.
Why did you select them?
Actually, I have to give credit to Steve Chrysler, who is the president of our community arts-based organization in town. Mm-hmm. When he first moved to River Falls from around the Milwaukee area, he brought the idea to us because they had done it in the area where he had moved from. Mm-hmm. So he got us started on it, and we're very thankful he did. It's
had you
been
done,
a hit.
Yes. Had you done children's theater stuff before?
Right. Now, we've never done anything in the summer. We have had interspersed in our seasons from time to time shows that have had children in them or totally all children's shows before. But nothing of this nature in the summertime.
Well, now, I spoke to you before. You indicated this might be kind of a hectic week for you. So why don't you give us a rundown of what happens when the Prairie Fire people come to town?
All right. Well, they usually come to town on a Sunday. We procure hotel rooms for them, two of them, and then they come on Monday. Usually we start at noon with registration, and then they do the audition process. Today it was 74 kids. All up on stage, they line them up from tallest to shortest, and then they have them do a lot of group things, responses, lines from the show, movement, and they continue that on for about an hour, watching the children and doing different things, and then they break and start to decide how they're going to plug them into the cast. So then once they're cast, we give them their parts and let them know what they are, and those that have scripts get their books. And those that are in groups, they learn all the lines while they're actually working on them, you know, as they go through it. Mm-hmm. And then I work on the program. So that's what I was doing today, was trying to get the program done so it can be printed by Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Then they started with rehearsing already this afternoon at 2:30 with some of the groups. I think I counted at least 5 different groupings of characters for Pinocchio. They have townsfolk, and they have vermin, and they have hooligans, and they have, what was the other category? Puppets. And then the regular members like Pinocchio and so forth. Some of these they rehearse like the large groups at a time. And since it's original versions of these children's stories, it's the basic story of Pinocchio kind of with twists and turns and original music and dance devised by the directors of Prairie Fire. And that is Daniel Norquist and Deborah Pick. They wrote these original versions, and so there's, you know, there's group dance numbers, group songs, and so forth. It won't be exactly the Pinocchio you might expect. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah, and so they rehearse then. It's starting today, and they rehearse Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We do 2 rehearsals, full cast, and then Friday we have a dress rehearsal in the afternoon, and then a performance following a dinner break. And then Saturday, also a matinee performance.
Okay.
That's kind of the way the week goes.
Sounds like a fast-moving week.
It is. They're supposed to have it all memorized by Wednesday, and I'm always amazed at young minds and how they usually can accomplish a majority of that by Wednesday. The rest of us, it takes a bit longer.
Yes, indeed. We're talking to Sandy Blakely of the River Falls Community Theater Board of Directors. How about the set? Is there a set that goes with this, or do you have to build your own, or how does that work?
The nice thing about Prairie Fire Children's Theater is they're pretty self-contained, and they bring in their own sets. They're usually pretty minimal, simple pieces that they can, you know, construct with PVC pipes and fabric kinds of backdrops and things like that. And then they bring in all their own props, and they also bring in all the costumes.
Ah.
So the only thing the kids have to worry about is makeup, putting on makeup, you know, the dates of the final performances. So otherwise, they bring everything in, which is wonderful.
Yeah. How about technical things, lighting and sound and all of that stuff? Is there anything like that going on as well?
They have a lighting and sound book they give us. They provide us with CDs. And then we, Community Theater, provide a sound and a light person, and we work the sound and lights for them during the show.
Does the staff from Prairie Fire erect the sets and then tear it down, or do you have to do that?
They always set them up, and then we assist them in taking it down.
Mm-hmm. Moving away from the Prairie Fire story for a moment, what's coming up next for the River Falls Community Theater? Do you have a fall production?
Well, the fall production is not ready yet, but we will be having auditions for that here shortly in August, and then it will start being in rehearsal right after that, and that's the one that we are doing in October, the dining room. We kind of take a little bit of a break in the summer only because now we're doing the 2 Prairie Fire weeks,
mm-hmm.
and so we try not to get ourselves involved in anything of our own at that time.
Sure. One thing I neglected to ask about, do all the kids who come to audition get parts of some sort?
The way we have it set up, they register through our Parks and Recreation organization here in River Falls, and it's kind of a first-come, first-served basis. So, like, for this cast, we could have 74, so the first 74 that signed up got into the week. Then, based on today at the auditions, then they got a specific part. And so, yes, all the kids, once they're signed up, are guaranteed a part.
Okay.
We used to do it the other way, where they'd come on Monday and register, and then they didn't know until the end of the day whether they were actually going to be involved or not. It was just too hard on, like, parents for planning and scheduling. You know, well, are they going to be involved all week or aren't they? And
mm-hmm.
we'd have maybe 100 kids come through. We'd have to audition all 100, and then it was just too many complications, let's say, that we had to try to work around, so we went to this way of doing it.
Well, you learn stuff after you do things for a while, don't you?
Yes, you do.
Well, we've been talking with Sandy Blakely of the River Falls Community Theater Board of Directors. She's the point person working with the Prairie Fire Children's Theater in staging a production of Pinocchio. The play will be presented Friday evening and Saturday afternoon at the River Falls High School. Sandy, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Appreciate it.
And we appreciate Mr. Jim Oliver. Follows theatrical productions, literary encounters for Spectrum West on a weekly basis as a volunteer, folks. That's the thing that should stand out right there. Coming up, a chat with Phil Cook. If you're from Eau Claire and you know music, you know who Phil Cook is. He's back for the big Eau Claire's Festival, which starts Friday. Happens through Saturday. This is Spectrum West. The Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory presents The Sonnets, a dramatic reading of poems Shakespeare considered his best, as performed by members of the Northern Lakes Theater Guild, Saturday and Sunday, August 20th and 21st at 7:30 p.m. On the website of the new Chippewa Valley Writers Guild is a guide to many of the writers' groups one can find and join in western Wisconsin. Their numbers were a revelation for me. One such group has been around for over three decades as a state organization. It now sports four state areas represented at the Wisconsin Faction of Romance Writers of America. The RWA has over 100 nationwide chapters, with members numbering in the thousands. In a couple months, Eau Claire will host a conference for these authors. So to get a top-to-bottom account of what's going on, we called Virginia McCullough. She's a writer who's lived and written in various locations across America and who is now president of the Wisconsin Romance Writers of America. With an over 30-year history, what's the history of your affiliation with the Wisconsin chapter of Romance Writers of America? Writing, I see, is your livelihood.
Writing is my livelihood. Started many years ago in the 1970s, actually, and I wrote nonfiction and have made my living. I still write nonfiction, and I'm a ghostwriter, editor, and then co-authored nonfiction books. Somewhere in the late 90s, I started to play around with fiction, but it's really my primary passion. I joined RWA, the Romance Writers of America, which has over 10,000 members now.
Wow.
In the year 2000, and then in 2001, I moved to Green Bay, and I immediately joined the Wisconsin Romance Writers and have been a member serving in various capacities ever since.
It seems like there's associations all over the place. Was it the genre that you were involved in that attracted you to RWA? Was it something that you wanted to get into and that's why you joined? How did that start?
I heard about it at a writers' conference when I was living in North Carolina. I went to Georgia every summer for a writers' conference, and there was always a romance track in the fiction writing part of the conference. I didn't take that romance track, however. I was more interested in what is known as women's fiction, and at the time, I really didn't understand that much of what I was writing, family drama, love story kind of, of work, fit into the romance genre, and that romance included so many different kinds of books of all lengths. It covers enormous ground, which is why RWA can have 10,000 members, more than 10,000 members, and has several thousand published members. It is the place that people often join, and the local chapters, to learn about romance writing and to learn fiction craft.
I'm glad you brought up the term women's fiction, because it was listed in my notes here in a line that started romance writer. It's a flowery term. If you think about it, I mean, the word romance has a warm and fuzzy connotation to it. And then I had women's fiction, but I also know it's not a women's only club.
It isn't officially a women's only club. In fact, over here in the Green Bay area group, one of our longtime members there is a man who has written under several women's names.
Ah.
And he is one of our Hall of Famers here in Wisconsin, Bob Rogers, and he lives up in Door County. He's written about 30 books.
I would think that would be the fun part of being a male romance writer, if you wanted to have a female pseudonym, would be to come up with a name.
Right. It really is. I have joked with people, and I've tried to interest various clients in various fields, and some of them write fiction. I've encouraged the men to check out the Romance Writers of America conferences, because the workshops, there's dozens and dozens of workshops, and representatives from all the big publishing companies and Amazon and Kobo and Smashwords and all of these people. And I have encouraged them to go, and they always think, oh, romance writers, but I'm writing a mystery or this. I said, you know, it's really worth it for what you learn. Besides, there are at least 2,000 people there, and about 1,990 of them are women.
Huh.
I even encouraged a man who was a friend of mine to attend romance writing conferences to meet women.
Oh, there you go.
But it's a, I mean, what better place to find women in one concentrated place? When the romance writers have a national conference, the men's restrooms on various floors of whatever hotel are pretty much taken over, and the hotel sets them up as women's restrooms just because they're trying to accommodate a couple of thousand women. So it's all an adventure.
To all you single men out there listening, I will be giving the website very shortly. We're enjoying a phone conversation with Virginia McCullough. She is president of the Wisconsin Romance Writers of America. They're coming to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, for a conference a little later on. We'll tell you about that. The four groups, area groups in our state, Virginia, where are they?
They're in Milwaukee, Chippewa Falls, Wausau, and Green Bay. We have had at various times and are trying to get our fifth area group, Madison, kind of up and going again.
I noticed some descriptions. Romance writing includes romance-oriented mystery and intrigue, historical romance. Then there's mainstream, there's light romantic comedies, family drama, medical romance, and paranormal and or fantasy.
Yes.
Those are all areas that fall under the romance writing umbrella?
They are all areas that can fall under the romance writing umbrella. It depends on the book, the author, and the publisher, whether they're classified as straight mystery, military intrigue. In fact, there's one whole genre called romantic suspense.
Okay. Yeah, there are other pigeonholes listed here, and I think they are associated with this fall into fiction workshop. Thrillers or police procedurals slash detective mysteries, religious-oriented novels, fantasy, mainstream historical or military fiction, men's adventure, I like that, and so forth. So those are, as I said, included in the Fall Into Fiction workshop. Tell us about that.
The Fall Into Fiction workshop is an all-day, one day, October 8th, at the Plaza Hotel in Eau Claire. And our featured speaker is a dynamo of a writer. Her name is Candace Havens. She's published with Harlequin and Entangled. She's a winner of many awards, including the Romance Writers of America top award called the RITA, R-I-T-A, RITA. And she's also an entertainment journalist, and she's interviewed people like Tom Hanks and George Clooney. She writes columns and does all sorts of movie reviews and that sort of thing. So she has that other dimension to her, too, and she's quite dynamic. Her topics are things that cover all of genre fiction. That's why we're encouraging people, whether they're members of Mystery Writers of America or science fiction writers, we're encouraging everybody who is writing fiction of virtually any kind to come and participate with us.
Do you have to be an RWA member to come to the conference?
Absolutely not. No, this is open to the public. Our members get a little break on the price altogether. The price range is $85 to $105. That includes lunch. An extra $5 is put in for the Friday night dinner, pizza party, book signing. Because many of us are coming from long distances, we'll stay Friday night at the hotel.
And I promised the single guys I'd have the website, but I'm going to let you recite it. What is that?
Well, the conference for the Wisconsin conference, that is wisrwa.org, W-I-S-R-W-A.org.
Okay.
You'll get to a calendar page, and that's where all the information is. The RWA website is simply rwa.org. If you type in Romance Writers of America, you will get to it.
Well, thanks for all the information. When we look at books, should we look for your name, or do you have a...
I write under my own name, Virginia McCullough.
Okay, well, we'll...
Mostly this, what we would call women's fiction, family drama, love story. Some of it based in Wisconsin, Durk County, and what I call Cape Heart Bay, which is really kind of a mix of Lake Geneva and Williams Bay.
Ah.
Wisconsin tends to be a good setting for lots of romance.
Virginia McCullough, thanks so much.
Well, you are entirely welcome. Thank you, and thank you for helping us get the word out about fall into fiction.
Well, why don't we get that word out one more time? The Fall into Fiction Conference is Saturday, October 8th in Eau Claire. And again, the website is WIS, that's WISRWA.org. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Having a good time here on a August morning. You might be listening to the repeat on Friday evening, so that won't apply. But we're with you anyway. Support for WPR comes from Simply Done in Downsville, home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery influenced by nature, including tableware, vases, and cookingware. More at simply-dunn.com. Well, Jim Oliver has not left the building. He has a thorough look at what's on stage in western Wisconsin.
Thanks, Al. Guinevere, a production of Seen and Heard Productions of Fall Creek, will be presented August 19th to the 21st at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Pinocchio will be presented by the River Falls Community Theater in cooperation with the Prairie Fire Children's Theater Friday and Saturday at the River Falls High School. The Young Performers Ensemble of the Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will present The Sound of Music tonight, Thursday through Saturday. The Phipps Children's Theater will present Alice in Wonderland through Saturday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The St. Croix Art Barn Theater will present the original intergenerational children's musical, The Chocolate Milk Cow, by Hannah Bartos and Ellie Mason Johnson, with music by Carrie Loney, through Saturday at the Art Barn in Osceola. The drama Wait Until Dark will play through Saturday at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake. Steel Magnolias will play tonight, Thursday, and next Thursday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. The play will continue in repertory at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater through August 20th. Also at the festival, Private Lives will be staged Saturday in the Black Box Theater. And Clue the Musical will play Sunday at the festival, with performances being given at the Taylor's Falls Memorial Community Center. The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake will present the musical The Andrews Brothers tonight, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, and next Wednesday through Friday and Sunday. There are no Saturday performances. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
We appreciate you joining us for Spectrum West this week. The album is Southland Mission. The artist is Phil Cook. The song is 1922.
Well, I worked all summer, couldn't save a cent. I gave all of my money to the government. I don't know quite how it got spent, but the banks are coming for my deed. Man at the mill can't see, boy. Let me get my feet for free, boy. Ain't that the way it is? Well, I cut out down a gravel road, and I've traded my stock for a V8 Ford. Dad's 410 down on the floorboards, and the title on down to me. That gasoline ain't free, boy. Cuts wearing out my knee bone. Ain't that the way it is?
Having a bad day? Feeling a bit left behind? Need to put your mind and your heart in the same cubbyhole? Doesn't take a doctor to handle this one. Old Uncle Al here has the perfect prescription. Engage in a conversation with Phil Cook. He has more gusto for life and positive attitude than any two men, so it's a foregone conclusion some of it's going to rub off. Phil Cook is a songwriter. He plays guitar, piano, banjo, probably anything you put in front of him, given time to grasp the basics. He's helped a lot of musicians, singly and in groups, to sound better. And now he's helping himself to a bigger piece of the meatloaf. He grew up in Eau Claire, discovered the entrapment for which music is famous, and trusted it so much he followed it all the way to North Carolina. He graciously shares his time, his momentum, his insights, his support. They're all on a big healthy buffet. Take as much as you like, then come back for more. Phil Cook, our phone conversation begins here. I was riding in to Eau Claire today, blasting your music. It doesn't get better than that.
You know, I absolutely designed and wrote the record specifically for road tripping. I mean, that's been really crucial to me in the last 5-6 years of touring. More than that now. Part of a touring musician's life is spending the days on the road. When you're in a van, traveling by day. When you're on a bus, you travel by night. The van advantage is that you see the countryside, you see the country go by in your waking hours. And you soundtrack that, you know, and when you got when you're lucky enough to play in bands like I've been lucky enough playing, where the musicians are all amateur musicologists, basically, they're all encyclopedias with different strengths of knowledge, different specialty areas that they know a lot about. I've just been so privy to the most incredible soundtracking you could have. So for me, I really have forged so many memories in that context that I just needed the record to be something that ideally I picture leaving early in the morning for something with some people you care about. Leave early. You know, there's something about when you leave at 6 a.m. and you got like the whole day ahead of you. You watch the sunrise, you watch all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you put on kind of sets the tone for like your hope for the trip, your hope for whatever you're going, your destination. That guided me. That vision of any one particular person putting that on in that kind of context, that guided so many moments on the record for me.
Now, is that your son we're hearing?
Yeah, I have a little boy, 10 weeks old. I'm home with him right now, and he just woke up from his nap. I was like, oh, I hope he sleeps through this interview. But he woke up right before he called, so perfectly hanging out. So that all my answers I'm giving you, I'm kind of staring into the eyes of a smiling baby and bouncing him on my knee as I'm doing it.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, well, I thought that since our listeners would be hearing him every once in a while, that we should probably introduce him. Because you are originally from Eau Claire, I, of course, have been aware of the existence of Phil Cook. I've never seen you perform. Oh, here we go. But I have now found your sound. I have a copy of Southland Mission, and I believe that Frieda Lynn, better known as Fred Schimmel, founder of Schimmel Pianos, would be proud of where you've gone.
That's the guy, huh?
That's the guy.
I've never actually done that research into the history of my piano, and that piano actually... Yeah. My parents sold my childhood home and moved to North Carolina 3 years ago. So they wintered down here, which is awesome because they're a few blocks away and they spend time with their grandkids. And
cool.
Both their sons live here. So in the process of that, the family piano had to go. And so I actually found one of my old friends. His daughters are just piano lesson age right when they were about to get rid of it. So the piano has now moved to another home in the Eau Claire area, where there are kids taking piano lessons, learning how to play on it.
And wow.
That's just really exciting.
That's as it should be.
Yeah.
And when you're back in Eau Claire, you can go visit.
Exactly. Well, I've seen it in its new home, and it looks really natural and happy.
I had the luxury, Phil, of watching the video or the mini documentary Southland Mission. I don't get that much preparation for most interviews. I thought there are two things working here that don't always accompany a work of music, an album, if you will. One is the word mission. The backstory of this music describes what really was and is a mission. Not too many albums are worthy of a documentary, but this work was indeed a culmination. Is it fair to say that Southland Mission finally defines the move you made? Has it taken 11 years?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, longer than that, I would say, even.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say longer than that. There are pieces that I've realized I've been carrying with me, the seed of which I realized sprouted all the way back when I was 14. So, I mean, there's some, it's really like an, almost like a calm lifelong kind of a thing. So the mission thing, I mean, I love, one person I really admire and look up to and follow and is Questlove from The Roots. He talks about in his autobiography, every album title he's ever made has to work on the different levels. It has to work personally, has to work for where the band is at. Has to work as more of a broad theme of where he thinks like bigger things are at too. So it's sort of like it has to operate on multiple levels. And that really resonated with me because I feel like my friends and I have been striving to think in those levels for kind of my whole life, but I just wasn't aware that we were, because we just had really big ideas about what music should be and where it should come from. And so I do think Southland Mission is multiple things to me. The mission needed to work on sort of a religious turn.
Along all those years, it must have made your head spin sometimes, and I'm thinking that maybe finally now there's an inner calm that you didn't have before. Is that working?
Yeah, I like the way you said it. I mean, well, I'll tell you what. You know, for me to get to a point, you know, as somebody who's been a sideman my whole life, I have a lot of ideas, a lot of little things that I've had forever. I've always got little things that I'm writing, little whatever. But I would say that, you know, until I made and fully wrote songs for Southland Mission, it all culminated in this trip to Virginia, to Galax, and I went to this cabin for 5 days, and literally it all came out of me in 5 days. Mm-hmm. I had all these fragments, and I didn't stop to listen to anything until the last day. And that last day, I finished and listened to the whole thing front to back in the order of things that I recorded it, which ends up being the recording, the order of the album. I just kept the order of, wow, of all of it. But it was the first time in my life, I'm serious, Al, the first time in my life that I listened back to something almost like outside my body and listened to something that I created or did and didn't just shoot down and was like, well, you got to improve this, you got to improve that, that's not real, that's not whatever. It was just like usually a shower of self-doubt, you know. And it was the first time in my life I'd ever looked back and just said, you know, wow, this is beautiful. Like, where this came from is pure and beautiful, and so much pride that I came out of that moment that I had never had before. Experiencing it for the first time kind of was like experiencing self-confidence for the first time, of just knowing where I'm going or where I'm headed and knowing what kind of threat I'm holding in my hand, where I have to go from here. Just confidence that I'm on a path and I know where I stand right now and I know where I want to go, and I feel really confident about the steps I need to do to get there and the work that I have to do to get there. It's like I feel the journey and I'm so excited to be on it. That's what this record is.
I bet you friends of yours, old and new, probably hear it in your music.
Absolutely, 100%. So many little things that I know. They're little tiny love letters to like friends that I've known for 20 plus years. Little just things that I know are just for them. It's just for them. A little part right here, this is just for them, because it's a little thing that we shared like forever so long ago. It could be lyrics, could be like some kind of harmony, could be a guitar solo. It's just a thing.
It's a nice way of saying it. I think I've just determined that you are a hoarder, but you're a hoarder of experiences. You seem to be a guy that has collected things as you have gone through life, and you sort of bring them along with you in a little bag or a box. As you go, you say, well, yeah, I should do something with this. I mean, your work with the Blind Boys of Alabama, the Charlie Parr Project, immersing yourself in the Virginia cabin, all those things have turned out to be parts of your scrapbook.
I think you called it. I'm really lucky. I think the way I learned how to play music and the way I learned how to play in a band started back in high school, and the people that I found, that we all found each other in Eau Claire. And it was a really incredible happenstance that happened to me. It really formed the way I look at music and still do, because I do think it's a lot more about friendship and relationships and the experience than it is about anything else.
We're enjoying a phone call with Phil Cook, and we should get your son's name because he's on the interview every once in a while.
He sure is. He's here. His name is Amos, 10 weeks old. He's doing real good.
Phil and Amos Cook with us here on Spectrum West. Phil is coming to the Eau Claire's Music and Arts Festival 2016, performing Saturday in a thing called Southland Review, which I read, by the way, you've taken on the road already. You had it in Newport. How'd that go?
So good. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it was just a... Honestly... You know, it was really emotional. Those men are my heroes, and I'm privileged and honored to call them my friends at this point, too. That's really rare. It's really rare for anyone to have your hero be your friend. Usually they're very separate things. So the Blind Boys are great because not only do I get to observe their greatness on stage, but I get to observe it side by side, shoulder to shoulder with them on the stage.
Yeah.
But I also get to just enjoy calling them on the phone and talking to them and just talking about our families and talking about gospel music, talking about things that we love. How can you put a value on that? That's insane. They gave a performance, and I've played with them several dozen times now at this point, that topped anything I've been with them with for. And it just moved me to the core of my being. Eau Claire's festival is different, you know. I got a different set of guests. If I can talk about them, I'd love to.
You are on stage, man. The spotlight's all yours.
I'll tell you what, coming up with me from Raleigh, North Carolina, a really incredible gospel group called The Branchettes, who have been performing for 43 years. They've played everywhere in the world. They used to be a quartet, three women, and their accompanist was a piano player. And now two of the members have since passed on, so now it's just Sister Lena Mae Perry and Wilbur playing piano and singing harmony. So it's a duo. I just absolutely adore them. They've become good friends of mine since I moved to North Carolina. And I've got my friend Justin Vernon, who I learned how to play music with back in Eau Claire all the way back in the 90s. And we've gone on to perform and grow as musicians and artists and challenge ourselves and each other to be authentic. And I'm really excited to be on stage with him. We're performing a song that he and I have loved, loved, loved for 20-plus years. And then my last guest is Bruce Hornsby, who is obviously performing at the festival as well. My close friends and family know the story of how I became a musician is Bruce Hornsby. I was 14 and playing his music and learning it by ear and playing it at talent shows was the first taste I had had of performing, and the first time anyone in my life knew that I was a musician was at a middle school talent show, and I was playing The Way It Is.
Wow.
Shortly after that, my father and then eventually my uncle took me to different Bruce Hornsby shows. One was at Rockfest in Kadot in 1994. I got to talk to him. He couldn't have been more encouraging and inspiring and spent time with this 14-year-old awkward kid standing in front of him. That moment was the moment I decided I was going to do this for the rest of my life. So this is a long circle to complete here. Bruce and I have talked about material we're going to perform. We're really excited about. It's cool, man. I can't wait.
On my sheet of paper here, I had a question. Is there a personal and professional side to Phil Cook, or are they the same guy? That's already been answered. I'm not even going to waste my time on that.
They're the same.
Yeah, I know
that.
They
just have to be. I can't hide the way I feel about anything. My wife will tell you. My brother will tell you. My kids will tell you. What I'm thinking is what you get on my face. I'm pretty easy to read that way.
Mike Taylor, new friend of yours, says you have a gift. Charlie Parr talked about you growing in all different directions. We had to worry about you going from sideman to soloist, but it's not going to go to your head. I can tell that now.
you know, everyone around me and my band are all, they're all better musicians than I am, which is, again, it's a great way to just keep it like, well, it's going to sound good. A. B, you know, I always know where I stand, and I always just have to revel in it and be able to, like, kind of celebrate it, which I think is great. That helps me. And also, just having incredible friends, you know, I mean, just the fact that I get to, like, do this for a living and leave, you know, my family, who I miss a lot, and we have a great community here, and I just realize how lucky I am. Every day, you know, I try and remember it. You know, whenever I take it for granted, it doesn't go well, and I feel it right away. But luckily, I have a lot of reminders around me.
Well, you sound like a fortunate guy, even more fortunate because you realize your good fortune. Your show, you're welcome. Your show at the Eau Claire's Music and Arts Festival 2016 is called Southland Review. This has been delightful. We've been talking with Phil Cook. Your story and especially your music make us all happy for you. Thanks.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it, man. Take care of yourself.
The Eau Claire's Music and Arts Festival, Friday and Saturday. It's more than a mouthful for me, so check out the website, EauClaires.com. That's EauXClaires.com. Oh, Colosimo. Yeah. Thanks for everything. Direction Debbie, Counselor Colin Back, they all make this thing possible. Next week, the one and only Pat Donahue, another of our resident writers' groups, will be featured, a bluegrass reunion, and more. Always more. You know that on Spectrum West. Sure you do. Hey, don't forget Saturday. It's the big Ashley for the Arts Festival in Arcadia, Memorial Park there. Pretty place. Well, all of us involved with the Big River Radio Wave are going to be there. We're going to be recording a live show that'll be broadcast on Labor Day here on WPR. Everything gets underway at about 11 a.m. That's in the pavilion. There are a lot of places that entertainment takes place at Ashley for the Arts. The pavilion is one of them. About 11 a.m., Mudcat and the Bottom Feeders will get underway, and then the Big River Radio Wave happens just naturally. You know how that goes. I'm Al Ross. This is Spectrum West. Thanks again. See you next week.